Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is the podcast of Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This is just one segment of today's show. You can hear all of our conversations about New York's vibrant cultural scene on demand at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
Lonely face, your words are wrapped in pain, and you walk the streets to find a place to spend tonight. Should I welcome you?
This is Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm John Schaefer. In a moment, we try to decode the genome of music to find out what you like and why. But first, this story. There's more music coming to your computer. Universal, the world's biggest record company, will put more than 100,000 tracks from its archives on the web. And one of the songs that will be available is an early recording from the band Nirvana. Believe it or not, what you were just hearing was Nirvana, not the 90s grunge rock band, but a 60s psychedelic act with the same name. Joining us to talk about the new old Nirvana and all the other goodies coming to the web for the first time is Brian Garrity, senior business writer for Billboard magazine. Brian, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Good afternoon.
Sounds like a pretty rich vault of material. What all is in this?
Well, that's one of the great things about this for music fans is, to a certain extent, the labels don't even know everything they have sitting in their back catalogs. The major labels, I mean, they've been in the business of collecting copyrights for so long that when you're talking about their out-of-print catalog, I mean, there's a lot of gold in the river that's yet to be mined out of there. So right now what we're seeing is, you know, a range of artists from Marianne Faithfull to Brigitte Bardot to, you know, all sorts of different acts that are going to be in play, with at least in terms of the initial music that's going to be available through this initiative.
Well, now, Universal is, as its name implies, a global presence. I mean, they are the biggest record company in the world, are they not?
They are indeed.
And they own many of the most famous labels. I think, you know, Jacques Brel, Frank Sinatra, I mean, aren't these people who, you know, fall under the Universal umbrella, at least for parts of their careers?
Exactly. I mean, when you're thinking about big artists like that, you know, practically any artist you could think of has some type of connection to a label like this where, you know, that have such sprawling catalogs. So it does theoretically impact a ton of artists.
All right. So if I have a back catalog of early classic Frank Sinatra, I can certainly understand why you would put that up on the web, you know, for sale through iTunes or whatever. Why would you take a completely forgotten and obscure band from the psychedelic 60s on the West Coast that happens to share a name with one of the most famous rock bands of all? Why would you dig that out? And what's the logic behind this?
Well, this is kind of the, I don't know how much there's been discussion of, but the long tail theory where it's, you know, consumers will buy, discrete pockets of consumers will buy small, you know, will buy practically anything and everything that's out there. You know, if there's a market, they're going to find it, and that's really what the labels are going for here. They have unlimited shelf space, and they have the opportunity to make these recordings available. So if there are music fans out there willing to pay for that content, the labels want to grab as much revenue as possible, even if it's on, you know, discrete transactions or, you know, very, you know, low number of transactions. It all ultimately adds up to something.
So if you sell 10 copies of an album a year in a record store, you lose money on the deal. But if you do it online, it hasn't cost you anything to put it up there, so it's just profit.
Exactly. Now, there are costs that are theoretically there for labels when it comes to the rights clearance process, when it comes to hosting content, you know, on a server somewhere. But by and large, you know, the physical retail distribution costs that you know, make CDs go out of print in the first place are not there for digital content.
All right. Brian Garrity is a senior business writer for Billboard magazine. We're talking about Universal, the world's biggest record company, deciding to put some 100,000 tracks from its back catalog on the web. When we say on the web, where specifically will these songs be sold?
Well, I think they're still working out. It'll be through all major digital distribution outlets. Now, one thing that hasn't really been clarified, as far as I can understand yet, is whether or not how much of this will be cleared for U.S. distribution initially. This is an initiative by the International Division of Universal Music Group. These are European recordings, and therefore the rights on those recordings may be limited to European consumers at first. So that's one of the thorny issues that come into play when you're talking about mining these back catalogs. There's a whole universe of rights that have to be cleared and checked off, and all the right people need to sign off on them before something can go on sale. So those rights might exist in some parts of the world, but not in other parts of the world. But once that all gets sorted out, it's going to be available through, you know, basically any and every digital distribution service that's out there, Napster, iTunes, etc.
But the thing is, in Europe, a lot of this music goes out of copyright after 50 years, and here in the States, it stays in copyright for another couple of decades after that.
Right, so that adds additional complications.
That is a wrinkle. Okay. Mm-hmm. So copyright issues, certainly this is part of what Universal has termed its digital archaeology, which is what took this process so long to get going in the first place. How likely are the other major labels to follow?
Well, this is the dream for all the labels on digital distribution, infinite shelf space. Everything they have in their catalogs, you know, this is the realization of the full power of their catalogs, really, if their ability to mine these works, get them cleared for distribution, and then put them out there for sale. So you're going to see all the major labels try to take advantage of all these goodies that they have sitting back in the vaults that up to now they haven't known what to do with.
So this is the that great infinite jukebox that people thought the web might eventually turn out to be.
Sure, this is an important step towards doing that, you know, that type of reality. It's going to be a slow and somewhat painful process for the labels to figure this stuff out. Just in terms of the manpower internally at the labels that it requires for them to, you know, to sort through all this material is a little daunting.
Yeah. Well, talking about sorting through material, we need to get on to our next segment about Pandora.com, where they have sorted through many, many songs on many, many levels and come up with some surprising results. But we've been talking with Brian Garrity, senior business writer for Billboard magazine, about Universal Records' decision to put some 100,000 tracks from its archives on the web. Everything from the old band Nirvana to early music from this English folk rock group, Fairport Convention. Brian Garrity, senior business writer for Billboard, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
This is Soundcheck. Thanks for listening to today's podcast of Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. This was just one of the show's segments. You can hear everything we do on demand at WNYC.org. Check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.